श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय, श्री वेणुगीत की जय, श्री नंदलाल चंद्र प्रभु की जय, गौर भक्तवृंद की जय, गौर प्रणाम, हरे हरि बोल। So, good evening, welcome to all of you, and we are continuing with Sri Venugit, our series on the song of the flute. Today, 14th lecture, we will be studying verse number 13, a little bit more than the half of our series here now. Today, the turn is for the cows and calves, but before that, let's briefly recap what we studied yesterday, verse number 12, where the gopis were describing the effect of the flute in connection to the devis and by extension to the devas, how Krishna's beauty, basically Krishna's character, rupa and shila, represent a banitotsav or a festival for ladies, for all ladies. Krishna is the personification of festivity for the female side, if you will. And in that connection, it is described how the ladies from heaven, the devis, while flying on their celestial airplanes, the vimanas, they catch a sight of Krishna's flute, not only seeing his beauty, his form and his character, but entering in touch with the sound, with the venu nada, and smara and smarana by extension, as we mentioned. By being impacted by Cupid, smara, they get absorbed in smarana, deep absorption to the point of fainting in their airplanes that are there accompanied by their husbands. So the husbands are seeing the whole scene there, and instead of protesting, instead of presenting obstacles, they are encouraging and nourishing and appreciating the bhakti, the attraction of their wives. And the gopis are appreciating that appreciation as well. So that's how the circle of appreciation works. No? Devas are appreciating the devis, gopis are appreciating the devis and the devas, and devas and devis are appreciating the gopis, as we mentioned, because the gopis say, we should be born in the society of the goddesses, so we don't have to deal with all the obstacles we have to deal in our attempt for meeting Krishna, and our husbands will help us for that. But actually, devis and devas are looking at the gopis and saying, if we just had the type of love that they have. So mutual appreciation, basically. But basically, the gopis in this verse are mentioning how the devis are being struck by the sound of the flute, Krishna's beauty and character, and their flowers in their hair, fall, and thus create some form of flower shower on Krishna, Pushpanjali, and their belts loosen by getting thinner in the moment by separation by hearing the flute. So again, our acharyas mentioned how this verse, as well as the previous one, in which the situation of the female deer was depicted, are spoken by married gopis, which kind of project their obstacles with their own husbands in connection to how, in these cases, the husbands of the female deer, the husbands of the devis, are not an obstacle, but are facilitators towards their meeting. Also, we share some ideas about how this flute is enchanting not only the gopis, not only the inhabitants of Raj, but in the denizens of heaven and everyone else in the whole creation. We share some examples about how this was happening, and very appropriately, the gopis address Krishna in this verse as Krishna, which means all attracted, basically. His attraction is magnetic in every direction in the whole universe. So we spend some time speaking about that, the nature of his attraction, the different flutes he's using as a weapon to create that, the different notes in the flute, and how that creates particular effects in particular personalities. When those notes are combined in a certain way, they give rise to different ragas, which create very wonderful effects in their devotees, and so on. So the gopis lamented again. One side, Krishna's festival for all ladies, except for us. Everyone is blessed except for us, intermediate human species. Animal species, lower species are blessed, deer and so on. Higher material species are blessed, devis and devas. We humans in between cannot meet with Krishna. We're damned. So we start to pray for being born as devis again. Not because they want to be in Swarga, but they want to be in a situation where there won't be the obstacles that they are perceiving here in their Purvarak, basically. So again, they appreciate how the devas are supporting the devis, similar to the example of the deer. And in their humility, because remember, they have prem, they have bhakti, prem bhakti. So when we speak about bhakti, we speak about humility. When we speak about prem, we speak about another humility corresponding with that level of bhakti. And naturally, the humility in the devotee takes the devotee not to make like a public show of their devotion. It's not that the gopis say, hey, look how much we love Krishna, we are the topmost, highest devotees in the world. They are not expressing in those terms. So actually they're feeling, we don't have enough bhakti as these devis, they have this chance, we don't have enough bhakti as the deer, we don't have enough bhakti as whoever crosses their mind as the main character of every verse. But by saying that, by lamenting in that way, they increase their bhakti, which already is topmost. Uttam, basically. So, they finish this verse. After two verses, this and the previous one, where the gopis are speaking about different examples of madhurya attraction, if you will. You know, the female deers being attracted towards Krishna in that direction. The devis being attracted towards Krishna in the context also of Smara or Cupid. Somehow the gopis, their own Smara, their own cupidity, if you will, their own romantic attraction to Krishna is coming more and more to the front, so they try in their nature, in their humility, in their nature of their love, parakiya bhav, abhihita bhav, they try to gupta, to hide their love, so they will try to take our attention somewhere else, so they will now direct their focus towards the camp, to the vatsalya camp, to the cows and calves. So today we will be sharing some words about the effect on of the flute in the cows, very especially connected with the auspicious passing of our dear Dulachandra Prabhu, who was quite fond of that type of lilas and so on. So there is no coincidence there. So in his honor and service, we will try to offer this Harikatha for his pleasure today and that of the Vaishnav. So let's go to the verse, verse number 13, so we can recite all together in Sanskrit, Vashanta Tilak Chanda or meter, where cows will be described as dressing with the raised caps of their ears, the sound of the flute.
Gavascha Vishnamukha Nirgata Venu Gita Piyushamutha Bhita Karna Puthai Pivantyaha Shabashnutastanapaya kavalashmatastur Govindamatmani drishashru kalashpriyantya.
So, the translation is like this. Using their upraised ears as vessels, the cows are drinking the nectar of the flute song flowing out of Krishna's mouth. The calves, their mouths full of milk from their mother's moist nipples, stand still as they take Govinda within themselves through their tear-filled eyes and embrace him within their hearts. So pretty intense picture here the gopis are receiving. So let's try to go word by word. And then trying to unpack a little bit the content of this particular shloka. So first line says, Gavascha Krishna Mukha Nirgata Venu Gita. We see over and over again the verses appear, this term Venu Gita, and some name, specific name for Krishna. But here the main characters of the verse appear in the very first word, Gavas. So Gavas is the plural of Go, means the cows. So the cows. Then Cha means and. We'll see eventually the possibilities of this word. Then says Krishna Mukha. So Krishna Mukha means what? Mukha in this case can mean the face, specifically means the mouth, but well, the mouth is in the face, so no problem. Krishna Mukha means the face of Krishna, basically. Or from the mouth of Krishna, we'll see, as the analogy comes. Nirgata Venugita. So Nirgata means emitted. And Venugita means the song of the flute. So we'll see what happens with the cows in connection to the Venugita, which is emitted from the face of Krishna, which means from his mouth, which means from his lips, and so on. So the second line will explain what the cows are doing with that. Piyusham utavita karna putai pivantya. So Piyusham, Venugita Piyusham, we can connect one line to the other. Piyusham means nectar. So Venugita Piyusham means the nectar of Krishna's flute, to be more specific. Not only the Krishna's flute song, but the nectar of Krishna's flute song, basically. Venugita Piyusham. Piyusham means nectar. So what happens with that? Utavita karna putai. Karna, utavita karna putai means with their ears raised high, you say, upraised, which were acting as cups. So referring to the ears of the cows. Acting as cups, are raised high, and in the attempt of pibantya. So pibantya means, what does it mean, pibantya? So drinking. You drink with a cup. So there's a poetic analogy here, comparing the ears to cups and the hearing to drinking. And generally, you drink with your mouth, but here they're drinking with their ears. Because what they are hearing is not mundane sound, but it's liquefied nectar. So you need to drink nectar. So the whole analogy adapts in that connection. So pibante means drinking. So the cows with their upraised cup-like ears are drinking the nectar coming from Krishna's flute song. So that's the first part of the verse, first part of this scene. Now we will go to the cow's descendants, the calves. So Sabhas Nutashtanapaya Kavalash Matastu. So Sabaha means the calves. Newborn, recently newborn calves, the Acharya will explain. Not even calves, but just 2-3 days just born. Which will make some important points. Snuta means dripping. Or oozing, you say in English? Oozing or dripping. Stana means from their udders. Udders? From the cow's udders, of course. Payaha means the milk. And Kavala means whose mouthfuls. Shma tashtur. Shma means, it's a verse filler, as we already explained many times. Shma, but also here means indeed. And tashtur means stood still. So now the situation of the calves is being described. They are stood standing still, and the milk that is dripping from their mother's nipples is, we will see, falling from their to their mouths, but they are standing still. So you may imagine what happens with the milk. So the last line further qualifies it, saying Govindam Atmani Drishashru Kalash Prishantyaha. So here comes the particular name for Krishna in this verse, which is Govindam. He who is for many things, but in this context is he who gives pleasure to the cows, to the goat. So Govindam Atmani. Atmani means within their hearts, within their atmas, within their very souls. Drisha means with their eyes. Ashru means tears. And Ashru Kala means with their are full of tears. And Sprishantya, which means absolute Sprisha of touching. So touching. In other words, we're saying embracing. By seeing him, they are embracing in the core of their hearts. I will explain why. Well, generally you don't see a cow embracing a human being, but why they are not doing so literally, physically also. So that's basically the idea of the verse. So as we mentioned in our summary, the gopis are trying to hide their bhava, but somehow on some degree that bhava is escaping, like the pressure cooker and the whistling coming sometimes from the pressure cooker. So now in this verse trying to cover the real mood, and again, whenever there is devotion, there is humility. So that means whatever there is devotion, there is an absence of show, trying to showcase your devotion. Apana bhajana katana kaivo yata tata, says Sri Narottam Das Thakur. Do not go here and there showcasing the results of your bhajan. It's not something, it's not a matter for public consumption. It's something confidential. Sanatana Goswami say, Gopayet Guruatmana Gopayet Ishtadevatam Gopayet Chaniyamantram Gopayet Ishtam Nijamalikam. He says, hide your guru, hide your Ishtadev, hide your Malika, hide your mantra. It doesn't mean that you invite Gurudev and you kidnap him and lock him in a room. Like, I'm following Sanatana Goswami to the letter. Get me out. Okay. Jai Gurudev. So we need to be careful to take literally some of these things. So hide means, again, do not make a public show and take them to the inner core, most chamber of your heart and relate with them from that confidential secret place. And because the guru is to share secrets with the disciple. And the disciple is to honor those secrets in a proper way, not to make a cheap show of something secret or confidential. So in this way, the gopis are trying to... In one sense, the most you expose your secrets in a cheap way, of course we try to share what we receive, but in a respectful and with dignity, in proper way. But if you do it without being careful, whatever wealth you have may start to diminish by making a cheap exposition of that. So the gopis, naturally, not calculating this, but the nature of their love, the nature of the premise, corresponding humility, which tends to, premise always expanding. So the nature of love is there can always be more love. So, and there can be always so much more love than in comparison to what you have. And in comparison to all that can be attained, the subjective experience will be, I don't have that. At least that's how I concluded when I was reading, Bhaktivinoda Thakur singing, I am full of lust, ambient anger. I was like, let's see. Is he really full of anger, lust, and no? Okay, so he's making a show. He's writing the song saying, actually, I don't have these things, but I will write like this for the guys who will sing my songs. No, either. He's not like calculating. So he's really feeling that. That's why we can feel something when we sing those songs, because the author was really feeling that. So how he got to feel those things when he was totally devoid of that? So at least the conclusion that one day came was like that. Not like he has prem, because on the one side he says, I'm full of lust, and three poems after he says, I'm Kamala Manjari. So he's like, what? On one side he's sharing his ultimate spiritual identity, so how accommodate that? So I felt someone who is, I think like Newton said, no? Like when you get to the shores of the ocean of knowledge and unlimited knowledge, you realize, I cannot ever claim, I'm just touching one point in one infinite line. I cannot ever claim I have it. No, I'm just like touched, or being touched even. No, it's like I choose to touch it, but I've been touched by one point of an infinite line of revelation. So there's so much more. The point is that whatever I have, in comparison to what can be still achieved, is nothing. So I cannot claim I have prem. Even though if I have prem, if you really have prem, you will feel how much prem you can further have, because there is no limit to the ever-expanding nature of love. So the subjective experience may be I full of lust, even though you have prem. At least that was my conclusion in that connection. So well, the gopis are speaking, because it's difficult, if not how, to understand the humility of someone who has love, especially, of course, if we don't have that love. If you have love, you will understand it because you are there. But if not, it's like only to a point we can understand it for sure. But how we can get benefit from our appreciation of the humility of those premikas in such a way that we can increase our humility being non-premikas, non-love-filled personalities. We need to increase our humility to get closer to prem. And one of the ways is to appreciate how humility plays itself out in the cases of those who have prem, as well as in the case of any other person, of course. So, again, the gopis trying to hide their love by their very nature of love and by their own very nature, specifically of their love, which is parakiyava, which is love itself tries to hide, what to speak of the love of the gopis, who is characterized by clandestinity, you say? Underground realities. No? So they immediately changed the topic after in two verses the Bhava started to come about speaking about female deer, female devis, and they start to speak about the anurag of the cows, basically. The affection, the attachment of the cows who are characterized by Vatsalya Bhava. They have maternal affection towards Krishna. And by extension, they will speak about the newly born calves as well. So, in the case of Sanatan Goswami, he mentions that in this and the three next following verses, certain group of gopis is speaking. He's not specifying who, but a particular gopis will speak for the next four verses. Jiva Goswami will say a particular group of gopis will speak for the next three verses. So I hope this is not something that will create some insomnia for you tonight. You can continue living with that. Three or four. And as is usual, Sanatana Goswami kind of links one verse with the other, saying, like the gopis say, so be it. The goddesses who are extremely smart are lucky, but can the good luck of the cows, which are animals, be described? So somehow the gopis express about some, okay, enough of speaking of them. What about this? Then go to another one. And everyone, the chamatkar increases, the astonishment increases. So here the gopis are basically saying that it's enough to talk about the devis in their ecstasy. Of course, it's interesting because on one level they are praising them and aspiring to be born as their self, but another ecstatic way can say, enough of this talk. And another wave of Staibab throws them in the direction of on the shore of the cows and the calves. Just take a look at the cows. So they are living in constant wonder. Try to imagine what does it mean. No? Like you are walking and you see one devotee. Look at the devotee. And this and that. And you start to appreciate on such a level that you say, I would like to be born as that person. But another wave of appreciation comes. No, but look at that one. Oh, if they have such bhakti and I would like to have... But you are really meaning that. It's not because you can make a cheap show of that. No? I mean, me, a devotee, I would like in the next lifetime to be born as you. And generally, nobody says like that because you have to have a deep realization to really mean that in a substantial way and not make a cheap show of humility. Because again, humility is not, it's not a cheap show, basically. So... The gopis are looking at the cows and saying, oh, they are taking Shamsundar through the highway of their eyes and putting him in the throne of their hearts and embracing him in the innermost core of their hearts. And look how tears are flowing from their eyes. Try to imagine there's place for visualization. Here it's important, as we mentioned the other day, to have disciplined imagination, which is different from mental speculation. Mental speculation is there are no boundaries, there are no perimeter, just like, let's see where we end. As Guru Maharaj was depicting these days, the different currents of rationalism and so on in Europe, when reason like divorced from revelation and let's explore now in this direction. But here we are speaking about, there's a context, there's revelation, there are certain Shastric parameters, and there's place for imagination there, in the context of that. There's a disciplined imagination, not like a chaotic, anarchic thing. Whatever you think, it's okay, and that's revelation, not like that. But we hear those things, and it's not that I have to forbid myself from imagining anything, because that will be a speculation. No, it's not like that. We hear something, and naturally some image will come, some inspiration will come. Of course, in time, that will be more and more filtered by further exposition to Shravan and Kirtan, but gradually our mental picture of this type of sceneries will become more and more accurate to the point that we will enter there. That mental picture will at one point stop being a picture, Mantramaya Upasana, will become a dynamic movie, if you will, as we say. There is a frame of the picture, still picture, Mantramaya Upasana, and then you have Swara Sikhi, which means you put play to the movie. It was in pause before. You were appreciating the picture. At the beginning, the picture was a little bit raw or maybe chaotic. Eventually, we refine our perception of the mental picture and we have some nice, okay, now we have a proper picture. We can see, Mantramaya Upasana. But eventually, the picture starts to move and starts to move to the point that you feel moved to move inside the picture. And it becomes your portal. It becomes your entrance into divinity, basically. But we have to start somewhere. And all this is the point, beginning point. Hearing all the things and trying to conceive gradually and refine our conception and our projection and so on. At one point, there is the disciplined imagination actually becomes the ultimate reality. Entrance into the Lila. That's our goal. Do not forget that. Maybe you may say, I'm so far, Maharaj. Okay, I'm so far it also. But we need to know all these stages and steps and what to do. So the gopis are appreciating, again, not only the crying cows, but the crying calves. Newborn calves, 1-2 days, already in ecstasy by hearing Krishna's flute. They were drinking milk. I mean, there's no other business for a calf, basically, in 1-2 days than drinking milk, being nourished by their mothers. But at one point, they stopped drinking that, and they continue drinking, as we mentioned, the sound of the flute. So this nectarian milk that comes with the love of the cows is not being drunk by the calves, but it's being drunk by Bhumi Mata, because it falls to the ground. The calves are in stamba, open mouth, but the milk is entering, is filling the mouth. There's no more space. They are not swallowing, so all the milk starts to fall and nourish the earth. It becomes the love of the cows, Mahaprasad of the calves, and go into the earth. So it's going from one mother to the other, no? From Gomata to Bhumi Mata, no? From their mother cow to mother earth. So try to imagine a picture of this. I mean, you think about it, it's really captivating. And all this because of the sound of the flute as a soundtrack, if you will. It's background music. So here the sound of the flute, again, is not sound of the flute. As we mentioned many times, Sukadev Goswami generally is not saying, Krishna play the flute. No, he said, no, the nectar of his lips was poor in the holes of whatever. No, something that really tries to make justice to what's really happening. So here the word piusa is used, which means nectar, one of many words for referring to the idea of nectar. Apart from Amrita and many others. So, interestingly, again, another poetic analogy is here. The sound of the flute is nectar, and then they say that sound of the flute emanated from Krishna Mukha, from the face of Krishna. And the face of Krishna sometimes is compared to a moon. And the moon is compared as the origin of nectar. And Krishna in the Gita says, rasa comes from the moon, the taste. Nectar comes from the moon. Soma rasa, you have heard maybe sometimes that expression. So from the moon, nectar emanates. And from Krishna's moon-like face, Krishna Mukha, Chandra, the moon-like sound of the flute is emanating. So here we have another moon and another nectar. We have the moon and we have the Soma rasa there. But here we have Krishna's moon face and flute nectar. So in this way, some parallels are there. Sometimes, I mean, as Guru Maharaj said, no, when you start to try to speak about the things, poetry is the only language available. No, any other language is far from making justice to what's happening. So sometimes Krishna's face will be depicted as a lotus, and his lips will be depicted as a whirl of the lotus. And the flute song is the pollen that is coming from the whirl of the lotus, going out. Nirgata is the word here, going out. Or sometimes the analogy given is, as in the Bhagavatam or the Shastra depicted, when the demons and the devas are turning the ocean. Remember the section? And they are trying to what? To obtain what from that churning? So many things come. But ultimately nectar. Nectar. Nectar of immortality sometimes goes. So in the same way it says Krishna's heart, it's like an ocean of compassion, an ocean of love. And that heart is being churned by the affection of the Brajavasis. And the result of that is the nectar of the flute, basically. So different ways of, different analogies to try to do justice to something that ultimately all analogies fail. Like, for example, I think it is Srila Rupa Goswami who mentions, I don't recall exact quote, but But basically, he's given so many analogies, no, for the beauty of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna in this particular case. Trying to compare them as much as his poetic skill is there, their faces and the different limbs with the most possible beautiful things on earth and more, to give us a reference. But at the end, he kind of says, feels exhausted and say, well, actually, at the end of the day, all analogies fail, and they can only be compared to themselves. And he finishes the verse that Radha is only compared to Radha, Krishna is only compared to Krishna. Stop analogies there. So, in this way, the cows and the cups are described here as, again, we are speaking about the moon and the nectar, and they are drinking the nectar of this flute song. Again, they are not hearing a flute. Again, that's an ordinary way of putting that. Ah, they heard the flute. No, they drank the nectar of the flute, which takes the whole description onto another dimension to understand it's not any flute, it's not any sound, and it's not any form of hearing, like ordinary way. So pibantya means they hearing, like the Bhagavatam saying what? Pi-ba-ta. Bhagavatam rasam malayam mahuraho bhuvi bhuvabhuka rasika. So, drink this Bhagavatam. No, the Bhagavatam, the third verse, the Ashirvad shloka of the Bhagavatam is basically giving that blessing. That's the Ashirvad in the Bhagavatam. Pivata Bhagavatam Rasam. Drink this juice, this nectar of the Srimad Bhagavatam till eternity and more, plus. It's a post-liberated drunkenness, basically. No, it is to be drunk. And it is to be drunk, again, not through our mouth, but through our ears. So your senses start to acquire different functions here, to transcend their own limited function, only hearing, only seeing, only smelling. Now we start to drink with our ears, or to see with our ears. Generally, the ears are depicted in those two functions many times in Shastra. You are seeing through the ears. By hearing, you develop another vision, another eye, or you drink nectar, basically. So here the cows are described like that, no? With upraised utavita karna punai putai, with upraised ears, no? Drinking, like a divine flow, descent of nectar is coming, and they don't want to lose any drop of it. Because you can be with the ears like this, as cows generally are, and you will hear something, but they want to really hear every single drop of that. Srila Rupa Jiva Goswami in Gopal Shampu says that in this level, it is impossible to point the difference between the tongue and the ear. The ear develops all the qualities of the tongue, in the sense of tasting, drinking. All the faculties of the tongue, we know which they are. The ear is developing that in contact with that type of sound. It's a sound that cannot just be heard, but relished. We have to learn how to relish with our ears, basically. You have to learn how to hear. That's why Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will say to his devotees, his disciples, students, he said, I'm not asking anything from you, only give me your ears. But he knew, if you really give me your ears, no return ticket, as we say yesterday. As Guru Maharaj said these days, no? Oh, bhakti is easy. On one side is the easiest, on one side, and another side is the most difficult. Because, no, you don't have to extreme tapasya or this or that. Just leave everything and surrender totally to me. That's like preliminary entrance into the realm of bhakti. Just surrender fully. And of course, as Guru Maharaj mentioned, that won't happen from one day to another, but that should happen at one point. And we should not cheat ourselves like, no, that won't happen from one day to another. We agree, but we should be doing something today for that to happen someday. If we are not doing something today, it won't happen any day. Because sometimes without bad intention, but maybe the unconscious conformism or whatever, we tend to like this magical thinking, like, I'm not doing what I should be doing for that to happen one day, but somehow that will happen one day. I have the hope. But if you ask yourself, but what I'm doing today for that to happen one day, I say nothing. So why, how the idea comes that that will happen someday if you are not doing at least something, that whatever you can do today for that to happen one day, which would be some other lifetime maybe. No problem, no rush. But what you are doing today for that to happen in three lifetimes. You should be doing something. At least at least this. If that's not there, I mean, you are just engaging in, that's real mental speculation. That's real phantasmagoria. You are just like with some hope. Oh, at the end of my life, I don't know how Krishna will take pity on me and will appear and will throw me into Vaikuntha and everything will be. It's just self-cheating, basically. So that's not the idea, basically. We need to hear and give ourselves. So here the gopis are, and the cows are given that example. We have to see through our ears, or taste through our ears. There's a very nice verse in the Bhagavatam, Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Harit Saroja. Sruta ikshita says there, interestingly. It is, the verse is basically saying, according to the form of God you worship, Krishna will appear in that form eventually. But he says, sruta ikshita. Sruta means hear, and ikshita comes from iksha, which means eyes. So, seeing through the ears, he's saying the verse. In other words, according to the worship that you perform, according to what you have seen by hearing. In other words, according to what Revelation is describing about the forms available of God, you worship some of them and he will reciprocate accordingly. It's not that, oh, for me, God is like Jimi Hendrix with six arms. He's not forced to reciprocate in that particular form. God forbid. So, some may like that, but what the case? So the point is, sruta ikshita, according to the parameters of what is heard, what is seen through hearing, what is revealed by entering in touch with revelation, he reveals accordingly. So, so again, here we are, the verse, going back to the verse. The description is, there is a particular flow, a particular current, the sound of the flute, the descending nectar from Krishna's moon-like face, entering the ears of the cows and creating a second current, which is milk, unending currents of milk, which, as we know, milk personifies affection. So the very sound of the flute is affection, liquid affection personified, and that creates in the cows their own version, if you will, of responding to that current in the form of a lot of milk. So it's interesting because the calves were already drinking normal standard quantity of current milk, but suddenly the flute starts to sound and the milk gets like multiplied by oceanic current dimension. And not only that, because imagine you are drinking like a little bit like this, and but suddenly you receive. It's difficult, but on top of that, the one who is trying to drink becomes paralyzed. So it becomes just Abhishek eventually. No, it's a shh, bathing on milk and affection. So, of course, again, generally to say that the milk in the cow begins to flow when the cow sees the calf. But here the main point is the milk is starting to flow when hearing the flute. That's the main point here. No? So the Vishaya Lambana is Krishna, ultimately. No? The object of affection is Bhagavan. So we see there is a certain flow of milk from cow to calf. There is a certain flow of milk from Benugita to cow to calf, no? With the Benugita in between. So that's only happening in connection with the sound of the flute. Unlimited currents of milk are coming. So it is. There are different definitions here. Some will say that the cows were eating grass and that the calves were drinking milk. But when hearing the flute, both became paralyzed. So the cows were chewing grass and they're trying to mix with saliva and swallow that. But a flute sounded and they became like, how do you say, fiberglasses? No? So the grass started to fall from their heart. Saliva, everything started like to drip. And the calves, similarly, they were drinking the milk and suddenly, stamba, shh, milk continued flowing. Try to imagine the scene. The cow is not moving, open mouth, grass falling, but milk flowing. grass falling, milk flowing. And the calf just like painted pictures, sometimes the charis describe. No? Like if you see a painted picture, do not expect that to move. It's a painted picture. So they are like that. But the milk is flowing. That's a moving part of the picture. All that by hearing just the sound of Krishna. All the other functions become part. All the other movements, as Gunaraj will say, become stopped, and the flute creates its own movement. When he speaks about love, he speaks in those terms. Love stops all movements in this world, but begins its own movement. Because love is not static, but ecstatic. No? So it's a dance. It's a celebratory movement. But it cancels all other movements. Like Srila Siddhartha will say, there's one point in the brain, he will say, that if you touch that point, all the functions collapse and nothing functions. So Krishna consciousness is like that point. You press on that and all material functions are cancelled, but on top of that, spiritual functionality is activated, basically. So basically that's the description of both, whatever the case, whatever they are having milk or having grass, standby is the norm. Standby in Sanskrit means what? Yeah, like a column, like state, no? You go to Puri, you have Garuda Stamba. No? Stamba means column. Sometimes Stamba is paralysis. It's another way of saying, if you are like standing like column, means paralysis. So whatever they are drinking or taking, that's the standard. Because of, again, the sound of the flute coming from Govinda. Some words on Govinda, the name Govinda here. Of course, it's important to understand the name Govinda. Every name of Krishna is a name that speaks about his relationship with his devotees. At least the primary names, we will say. Bhaktivinoda Thakur presents that idea in Harinam Chintamani. Mukhyanam and Gaunanam. Mukhyanam, Gaunanam are names of God which do not speak about his relationship with his devotees. More like generic, abstract names. The absolute God, controller of the universe, or something like that. But there are no names like Radhanath, Yashodanandan, and so on. Names that speak about relationship with certain people. Govinda can be also one of them, because it's he who gives pleasure to the Go, which means to Govardhan, to Go Kula, to Go Peace, to Go Pass, to Go, to the cows. So it speaks about certain love on the other side and his love in reciprocation to that love in particular. So there are many verses in Shastra. We won't enter into the details today about how much Krishna loves the cows and so on. That's a big separate volume. But there are many verses. Gautamiya Tantra mentions how whenever any of us, like for example, how do you say? Fondles? Caresses. How you caress a cow, or you feed the cow and you scratch her neck, whatever, all these type of angas of bhakti actually. Krishna is supremely pleased when he sees that. So that's part of your daily sadhana. You have the option here. You almost do not have that option anywhere else, so take the opportunity. So Govinda is very pleased with that. And as Guru Maharaj would like to say, the cows personify this notion of giving. Everyone in Vrindavan is cow-like. Everyone is a giver. The cows taking grass, which for us is not very useful, and they transform that in milk, through which you can do so many things, which is used in ghee, which is meant for sacrifice. So all this converges into the idea of sacrifice. They take something that is not useful, and they are assisting us in sacrifice. So givers, sacrificers. So if you want to enter, Guru Maharaj will say, if you like to enter to Vrindavan, okay, Vrindavan is Golok, the planet of cows, the planet of God, planet of those who are like cows, givers. So better you are ready to sign that contract. I mean, you're already signed, so better you know what was in these small letters there. So it's important to worship the cow. Now, indeed, Guru Maharaj told me today that tomorrow we can do also as part of the celebration for Dulal Chandra Prabhu's disappearance, we can also do one Go Puja, like in his honor, just for you to, you cowherds, how cowherd boys and girls to organize that. We can do before or after the program, we can see, but that's also a nice way for celebrating that, no? And interestingly, also the name Govinda, going back to Govinda, as we spoke some days back, Govinda is also a name for Vishnu, and Krishna himself just sort of invoked those names to protect Krishna, actually, when he was young. But then he was given the name Govinda by Indra after the Govardhan Lila, basically. When, as you know, Indra, after trying to kill all the Vrajavasis, pretty serious stuff, I will say the worst thing you can possibly do. He said, I would like to kill Krishna. How to kill Krishna? I will kill the Vrajavasis. If they die, he dies. He was right. Of course, the problem is they won't die, but he thought, if I got to kill them, he cannot live without them. He was totally right. But we know what happened. Govardhan Lila unfolded, 7 days like this, great blessing for uninterrupted weekly darshan for all the Vrajavasis. And eventually Indra realizes his mistake and goes in a hidden way, in a private way with Surabhi, cow Surabhi, and beg forgiveness to Krishna, offer prayers. And eventually Krishna is bathed and offered Abhishek, and he's crowned as Govinda. Indra gives that name to him, Shiva gives a flute, and Surabhi offers prayers, and all this is done in one place in Vrindavan called Govinda Kund. One can go there, it's a very special place near Govardhan. So he received that name, Govinda, in the Govardhan Lila. And again, Govardhan Lila is pretty much connected to Go Puja. No? Govardhan Puja, every year we just celebrate Govardhan Puja and Go Puja the same day. So there's a connection here. The verse speaks about the Gao, the cows, and therefore Govinda, name connected to him. So Krishna is really ready to to serve and how to say, pay attention to whatever the cows may want. In some other place outside of Vrindavan, some yogis, some personalities trying to meditate on Krishna and call him, but he may not appear that quick. But if he's in Vrindavan and the cow starts to moo, you say? The cow will, Krishna will go immediately. What do you need? Do you need this? Do you need this? He starts scratching. Do you need some grass? He starts to fondle her and caress her, decorate some necklaces and some painting. Whatever the cows are calling, Krishna is there, as we know. That's part of his daily sadhana with his japa mala. He's counting all of them, different groups, and so on. We spoke something about the cows before, also, no? How when Krishna is counting and calling them, some of them do not appear on purpose, because Krishna is calling the main leader of each group of the cows. And supposedly the rest of the group will come with the leader, but some of the cows who are not the leaders want to be called personally by Krishna. So they delay on purpose and do not appear. And Krishna says, there is one cow missing. And he calls her on by name. Oh, there coming. Let me read something that Srila Sanatana Goswami is saying in his purport to this verse, to this effect. He says, regarding the picture again, over and over again, it's important to always repeat from different angles the same picture that the verse is trying to convey. The cows simply stand, stunned, overcome by sattvika bhavs. Govinda indicates their master, the lord of the cows. Even though they had grass in their mouths, they did not chew or swallow, but simply stood there. Milk was coming from their udders out of affection for the Lord as a calf. So maternal feelings, Krishna is Vatsa. Now, Vatsa means calf. And then from there you have the word Vatsalya. Vatsalya bhav means like feeling for someone like if the other one is a calf. Like the cow feels for a calf, that's Vatsalya. So similarly, a mother feels for her child, like a calf, in that sense. Since their eyes are covered with tears, that's a nice point here, because they are described with tears coming from their eyes. And there are two possibilities regarding the idea of tears, we'll see. On one side, Sanatana Goswami says, since their eyes are covered with tears, the cows see Krishna in their minds and remain standing like in a picture, touching Govinda by licking him in meditation. Because they're coming so many tears that they cannot see him. It's like a torrent of tears. How do you say? Cataracts? How do you say? Yeah, but in English. Similar, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you can achieve, like you have Niagara falling. So they are, since they cannot see Krishna, they turn their senses inward and they see him in, have a vision, and then they embrace there. Here the word drisha means with the eye. So it can mean they see with the eye, and we will see the example of how they see with the eye. Or also, there's a conversation that they see with the third eye. Because drisha can mean also in singular, with the third eye, with the eye. Third eye means like inner vision mostly, like spurti, vision, revelation. Like the gopis are having. The gopis are not there seeing all this. They are in the village, and cows, calves, and Krishna are in the forest. But they are, if you want to speak in yogi mystical-like terms, with the third eye they are seeing that. We say premanetra, the eye of prem. That's more charming for us. Jiva Goswami says something similar. He says that the eyes of the cows begin to flow with tears, and before were filling their throats. Now, their throats were before filled with tears, and somehow their tears ascended and started to flow from their eyes. That happens generally, when you are crying and you try to stop there, and eventually it goes through the proper route, highway. And again, interestingly here, the idea is not only the cows, but as we will see, the newborn calves are experiencing the exact same thing. And the expression here is ashru kala. Ashru means tears. And kala, some of the acharyas mentioned, can mean not only torrents of tears, that's one possibility, but others, small tears. What's the meaning of small tears here is that the cows purposefully, they are trying to not cry so much so they cannot lose sight of Krishna. So both options are charming, equally charming. One is they cannot see him and they see him with the inner eye. Other one is they make an effort not to cry that much, not because of social shame. Oh, they will see me crying. No? But just not to lose sight of what they are seeing. It's a whole festival, as we say yesterday. You know, Krishna's presence, beauty is utsav. It's a festival in itself. So they try to contain that is one option, and the second option is they cannot contain that. Both of them are equally possible and charming. And regarding the word sma, which as we mentioned many times already comes like the fourth time here, it's a verse filler. Whenever you need to insert some syllable to complete the meter. But sma also means whatever it has meant in most of the verses, which is bishmaya. Bishmaya, which includes the word sma. Bishmaya means astonishment. So it can apply to the astonishment that the cows are feeling, we're hearing the flute, that the calves are hearing, we're seeing the hearing the flute, or that the gopis are experiencing, while seeing this whole event in their inner eye. So sma, again, represents this notion of Bishmaya or Chamatkar, astonishment, which is to say it is the essence of rasa. You take out the experience of astonishment, there is no rasa. Cool. Rasa sara chamatkar. Chamatkar is the essence of rasa, a feeling of wonder. Mostly every person on earth is striving for getting a dose of that experience here and there. Wonder, something new, something exciting. As Gurmas was explaining these days, well, entering the forest and all that implies for the cowherds and the new adventures and so on. So the gopis, again, by seeing such a scene, as you may imagine, on one side they're appreciating the fortune of the cows, and they know Krishna himself will personally bathe them, will caress them, as we mentioned, will garland them, will fondle them, will touch them, will feed them, will rub their backs. Rub, you say? Their backs and necks. He has a relationship with the cows from his very childhood. I mean, he was born and cows were there with him. I mean, they took him as one more calf, something like that. And so he's extremely fond of them. I mean, that's part of his DNA. He's a gopa. Part of his definition includes the word cow. I mean, who he is? I'm gopa. So cow is in his DNA, his name, basically, many of his names. So interestingly, the gopis say, so someone may say that that's the reason why the cows are so attached to Krishna. Because of how much Krishna reciprocates with them or how much they know him from birth. But the gopis say, no, this is not because of that. This is not correct, Saki, if you think like that. Because look at the calves. Now go. Let's go to the calves. The calves were born 2 days ago. They don't have an established relationship with Krishna. They don't know him from birth. They are just two days babies. No, so they only know their mother's breast, nothing else. Like a baby, that's their only like self-centered reality, basically. But they are falling unconscious similarly upon hearing Krishna's food. So again, it's the reason for their reaction is not because they have a permanent established relationship, but just because of the nature of that song, the nature of that flute, the nature of that Krishna. I hear one devotee recently mentioning in this connection, was a good example. There is a famous regarding Krishna as a flute player and all that it implies, no? Like the effect he creates. There's a famous flute player in India. I mean, I would say this is the most famous flute player in the world, whose name is? Chaurasya. Mm-hmm. So, we agree. I mean, no need, I think there is full consensus. If you know something about Indian music and Bansuri, you say, who is the best Bansuri player in the world? I mean, I think everyone will say the same person, because it's like, it's him. So it is said, and he's a devotee, basically. He has a school of Bansuri in Vrindavan, and he made very, very nice things. So it is said that he was given that name, Hari Prasad, which means the mercy, Prasad, of Hari. So it is said that their parents, before conceiving him, they wanted him to be a flute player. So they thought, well, but if he has to be a good flute player, he has to receive the mercy of the best flute player. So they named him Hari Prasad, the mercy of Hari. So he can play the flute, being blessed by the flute player, basically. And it is said that before he began all of his presentations, always he will offer first pranam to Sri Krishna and saying, acknowledging he's the best flute player. Here I'm just trying to do something, but he's the flute player. So again, Krishna's flute playing is supremely enchanting, captivating. Of course, also we have mentioned to add a certain layer of charm to this. Sometimes the some of the acharyas will speak about, okay, yes, Krishna's a good flute player, and everyone agrees, but those who may be biased with Radha's camp will say, but Sri Radha's ankle bells, when she start to move and dance, Krishna's flute playing is like, Or she has a bina also. So when she plays her bina, Krishna's flute playing is, Sometimes there is competition. We have heard some leelas of this, no? Krishna sometimes with flute, and Sri Radha will start to play bina. No? And as we mentioned, no? Krishna flute starts playing slower and slower and slower, and the flute falls all together, and Krishna keeps moving the finger. There's no flute anymore. No? Sri Radha, winner of the competition. Srila Rupa Goswami, there's one prayer that he prays to both of them, Radha and Krishna praying to them, like, when I can have you as a jugal bandi. In Indian music, jugal bandi is when two musicians play together. Like you have a famous flute player and a famous, whatever, violin player or bina player. And that conjunct presentation is called jugal bandi. And jugal means like a pair, basically, no? Jugal. So he's praying to Radha and Krishna, when I have the darshan of the two of you as a jugal bandi, playing bina and flute, competing with one another and so on. And some acharyas, again, those specially biased, transcendentally biased to Radha, will say, actually, Krishna is playing his flute to announce Radha's superiority on her bina. Krishna is trying to imitate on his flute what Sri Radha is playing in her bina, basically. There's one verse in Radha Rasa Sudanidhi, which is one of the books for those biased towards Sri Radha, if you will. And Sri Prabodhananda Saraswati says there, this verse 58. He said, the king of elephants, Sri Krishna, described him. the king of elephants, intoxicated elephant Sri Krishna, who plays his celebrated flute so nicely in the fifth note, in such a way that it resembles the sound of the Bipanchina Veena, which is the name of Radha's Veena. Yeah. So like say, okay, when he plays nicely, that starts to resemble her playing of the Veena. Of course, this is not to enter into mundane better and worse or something like this. No, this created dual mundane dichotomy. It's a charming way of enhancing this same principle. Okay. You have some minutes? Okay. We should have eternity for Harikatha, so no problem. Let's go to the purport of Sri Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. I would like to read some very nice things he's mentioning in his Sarata Darshini commentary. He says, I'm going back, no? This is the exercise. We describe the verse, enter deep into some detail, we go back to the general idea, we enter deep in another direction, we return to the general idea, we go back and enter. And in this way, we are trying to really deeply ruminate and have a comprehensive understanding of it. So Vishwanath Chakrabarti Pad says, paraphrasing a gopi, say the gopi who speaks this verse says, in fear of spilling the nectar of Krishna's flute, the cows have raised their ears like cups to hear that sweet sound. Like they have like their antennas up, not to lose a single frequency of the vibration. And the calves, having just drunk their mother's milk, perk up their ears to drink the nectar of Krishna's flute song as soon as they hear it. Then they stop sucking their mother's nipples. The milk falls from their open mouths and they stand as if stunned. So in one sense, their mouths are full with grass, with milk, and the hearts are more than full. The hearts are overflowing, and somehow externally that shows like some the full of their mouths and so on. And interestingly, the gopis even project their madhurya for a moment, according to Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, into the cows who are in Vatsalya. And they say, it cannot be said that the cows remain only with Vatsalya Bhav, nor can it be said that Vatsalya Bhav is the cause of the bewilderment. Because all of you should see the bewilderment of their calves, though they are devoid of that bhava. Again, the calves are just born. They don't have Vatsalya Bhava for Krishna. They don't have any relationship established. And they are exhibiting something. Especially if you know which is the attachment that a calf has for a mother. I was seeing the other day in one video of the newly recently born. A video with the calf being born from the cow, immediately born. And immediately the cow started to lick the calf and clean him from all the different liquids and substances from just being born and so on. So, especially if the calf is just born, but this calf is just born, but Krishna's flute. No? The two of them, the mother is not caring about the newborn calf, but the calf is not caring about her mother. Just like the two of them are like, forgetting each other and just absorbing Krishna's sound flute. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur continues saying, thus, the cows stand still as they place Govinda within the lap of their minds through their tear-filled eyes and embrace him out of Vatsalya Bhava. Going to the standard idea of Vatsalya Bhava. Motherly affection. In this way, all living entities have unalloyed pure love for Krishna. Now comes the gopis' lamentation. In this way, the gopis are thinking, all living entities have pure love for Krishna and are fortunate because they can meet Krishna. And last part is, only we are unfortunate because of separation from him. So always the same dynamic is coming. No? Appreciation, lamentation. Deeper appreciation, next verse, deeper lamentation, next verse, and next verse, and next verse. But all that turns their hearts, increases their purvaraga, and further promotes the eventual union. So again, in this particular verse, the implication is the gopis are praying to be born as cows. Now in the previous one, let's be devis. Now let's be cows. The cows, what's their example there? The cows have totally forgotten their own bodies. They were feeding themselves. No? Remember, the cow were eating grass. They forgot to eat. They forgot to take attention of their bodies. That's not so easy. You generally do not forget to eat. Oh, 1 week without lunch. I forgot. You may forget so many things. You forget to chant your round. You forget to study shatha, but not lunch. You won't miss any one of those. You may miss Mongol Arctic, Sunday art, but you won't miss breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Those are the sacred samyams. But in this case, sound of the flute coming, the cows totally forgetful of their own bodies. No? The food was there, just imagine. It's like if you are not eating for a week and I bring you the most delicious food and you start first bite, Krishna's flute sound, not something else. No? And that's the case of Parikshit Maharaj with hearing all this. Remember the conversation, wider conversation. And some points, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions in his commentary that Sukadev will tell to Parikshit, do you want me to continue speaking about Krishna Lila? Because, already 5 days of narration, you have not eaten, slept, drunk. So maybe take some rest, eat something. We can stop here, even. Not like testing his student. No? And Parikshit Maharaj will say, no. You say I have not eaten, not drunk. I have been drinking and eating all these 5 days. Mm-hmm. No? This Bhagavad Katha is drink, is food, is rest. No, I don't need to sleep. I don't need to eat. I'm just like, he had forgotten all that level of bodily necessities, but he has replaced them with a higher vitamin, if you will, the form of Bhagavad Katha. So, the cows, the gopis appreciate the cows, did not only forgot, I'm looking many at that because we have cows there just in case, don't forget. So they have not forgotten about their bodies only, take care of their needs to feed, but also about their bodily connections, their children, the calves. When we speak about ego and extended ego, me, my body, my family. The cows have forgotten everything. They are not taking care of themselves nor of their. Of course, you have properly understand that. It doesn't mean like you have a baby, stop feeding him. I'm not saying that, please. No. So the idea is, upon hearing the sound of Krishna, they forgot all consideration. If you have that capacity and yet and that fortune, forgetting everything else is, in one sense, not forgetting everything else, but concentrating on that thing which includes everything else. So you are not being neglectful with anything. You are feeding the root of the tree. So all the branches will receive their part by going to that single spot. So when we say reject everything and surrender to Krishna, actually we are not saying reject anything. Reject everything in the false sense in which you are accepting everything. And accept Krishna, which implies accepting everything else, if you really understand what it means to accept Krishna. So that's a very integral, comprehensive proposal. Not just go to Krishna and everything else is left on the way. No, Hari Bhagavati Premnasha Bhavakuti Labhavet. Love moves in a crooked way because on its way it's accepting and embracing everything. Not leaving anything behind, but including everything as part of its equation. So the gopis again are appreciating that level of dedication of the cows, which again, in great part, is their own projection onto the environment, as we mentioned. But the gopis say, alas. Alas, you say in English? We are cursed. In our particular situation, we are hearing the flute, but we are not able to just run and meet Krishna openly like the cows are doing. We are unable to stop thinking about our bodies and homes. Actually, they are totally in self-forgetfulness, but they, in their humility, say, no, we are totally attached. We can only listen the sound of the flute from afar. So again, the daimya of prem, the humility of divine love. They will hear, they will think these cows, these calves are 1,000 times better situated than us, and more. They forget everything. They forget their bodies, feeding their bodies, their bodily connections. Again, they are projecting their own situation. If we just could do that and just meet Krishna, which of course will happen very soon. So they are able to go meet Krishna and embrace him. Again, that's what the gopis want to do. And we have taken birth the community of cowherders. We are gopis, but unfortunately we are absorbed in our mortal selves, in our bodies, home, again, this is a big lesson for us sadhakas. No, I mean, you don't have to think, oh, these gopis are so materially attached. No, I mean, you pay close attention, you will see who the gopis are. But you pay close attention and also see who you are and where you are standing between the cows and the gopis, if you will. Or below the cows and the gopis, in my case, not between. So the gopis are lamenting, oh, we are uselessly carrying the burden of this body in this lifetime without making it fulfill its ultimate purpose, be ultimately successful, rendering this body for the service of Krishna. And the cows are animals. Generally, animals do not have that much discrimination, as they say, with the deer. But they are forgetting their own bodies, self-forgetfulness. We cannot even forget our houses. Oh, fai, is this in English? Fai on us. So they lament with this humility, considering themselves. Oh, haluschati nalina nava padara vindam, they say, no? They say, samsara kuppa patitotara nava lambam geham jusam api manasya dirachana sadana. When they see Krishna in Kurukshetra and say, he say to them, come with me to Dwarka, say, no, we are attached ladies to village life. We are very simple people, not sophisticated. We are ordinary, attached to all these cows. And so we only pray for you to be present, always present in our minds. Which the acharyas say, well, their minds are Vrindavan. So they are asking Krishna, go to Vrindavan. So this is a big lesson for us as sadhakas. Basically, what the gopis are appreciating in the cows and what they themselves personify, the gopis, is, at least in a very rudimentary way, Sarva Dharma Parityaja, the clarion call, sound of Krishna's flute. Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will call that verse of the Gita the clarion call, Sarva Dharma Parityaja, the flute call. Sorry. Mam ekam sharanam braja ham tum sarva papibhyo mokshayisyami masyacha. Abandon everything, all consideration of what's correct, of what's dharmic, and just take shelter exclusively in me. And do not fear, because why he's saying do not fear? Because he knows we are totally fearful. So do not fear. I will take care. I will cover up your bases. No reaction for neglecting anything. There is nothing you will need. But it's so difficult for us to have faith in that. We still make so many arrangements to secure this and that, because if I do not do that, who will provide? And Krishna say, well, maybe you forgot that verse in the Gita. And one aspect of Sharanagati, Rakshishati Bishwaso Gopritui Varana. To try, have confidence Krishna will protect me, and to acknowledge Krishna is my maintainer. Which, I mean, this is not a cheap talk. We have to really inhabit the concept. It's not just repeating the concept, but live inside the concept. There are so many levels of it. But gradually we have to reach such standard, and this is not promoting laziness. No? How Krishna will protect me, so I don't do anything. I mean, if you have the realization of Madhavendra Puri, you can do that. He was not even begging. He was thinking, if Krishna wants me to eat, he will make the arrangement and inspire someone in the heart to bring me something. If he doesn't want me to eat, I will fast. So Krishna had to make the arrangement. He had full faith Krishna will provide. He himself said, Yoga Kshimam Mahamiham Ananya Chintayantam. I personally provide my devotee of what she needs, and I clean what's more than he needs. I will take that off. I will preserve what is okay there. So we should have faith in these things. Krishna is, and we should pay attention how in our lives Krishna is actually providing and maintaining and taking care of us, really, in ways that we cannot even see now and imagine and conceive. So that's a very big part of our sadhana, to increase our awareness of all the layers in which Bhagavan is protecting us, nourishing us, loving us. That's already happening. He's there doing that. We are not there. He's there doing his business, as we mentioned. But our business is another one. Our business is to trust that he's doing his business, we say the other day. No? Krishna has his business. He's doing that. Our business is to have faith he's doing his business and act accordingly. So Guru Maharaj once mentioned that. Give me some minutes. I really like when he mentioned that first time. He mentioned that many times, but first time we were in Argentina, he said, he mentioned this verse of the Gita, Sarva Dharma Parityaja. He said, this Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta call it the flute call, which means the flute sounds, I leave all considerations behind and just join that clarion call that Guru Maharaj will call also. No consider, and just fully give myself in that direction. So he told me, when I joined my Guru Maharaj's mission, I joined the mission in that spirit. I'm giving myself here forever. No consideration. I'm totally investing myself here. In the spirit of Sarva Dharma Parityaja, the flute call. I heard the flute sounding from Srila Prabhupada, Guru Maharaj said. No? So he was the personification of that call. So I ran there and gave myself fully. With that faith and intensity. But after some time, when Srila Prabhupada left this world, something happened in his institution, as you know. And in the particular case of Guru Maharaj, his experience was, the flute call is not sounding here for me any longer. So I came here in that spirit, forever I give myself to the flute. But if the flute is not there now, the question now is, where is the flute? Because I want to keep giving myself comprehensively in whatever direction, whatever form it takes. So eventually he said, oh, then I hear the flute call coming from Srila Siddhar Maharaj. Because Prabhupada himself took me there. So the one flute took me to the other flute. If you so I went to Srila Siddhar Maharaj and joined him in that same spirit, fully, comprehensively. But after Srila Siddhar Maharaj passed away, some things happened in his mission as well. So Guru Maharaj felt the flute call is not present here. So he started to pay attention, where is the flute call now? So he eventually found the flute call and he's where he is, and we are where we are because of that. But his point was, we have to follow the flute call no matter where it's sounding. Now, it's not that Krishna is playing the flute and you run, oh, that's the flute, let's go. And when you just think, I'm getting to Krishna, you hear the flute sounding there. I say, oh, Krishna, but you played there. And I just ran and did all this stuff to get there, and now you're playing. I mean, that's his style. I mean, Krishna has his own style and personality. You cannot just complain. Hey, play the flute in unidirectional way. And stop playing here and there. No, that's his flute playing. So you will got there, stay for a while. Now he disappears. Flute is sounding there. So we will run there. Now he disappears. Where is the flute? The only question is, where is the flute? How can I join the next clarion call? So that's the spirit in which we should also engage as sadhakas. And of course that the gopis and everyone in Vrindavan is showing. In such a way, Vrindavan, as one devotee once said, is the land where there are nobody's measuring any consequences. That's Vrindavan. No consequences measured, no calculation. So, let me finish today with some sharing with you some brief lila concerning the flute call, since we are speaking about the flute and the flute call, and how sometimes we may try to not hear that flute call, may internal obstacles may want to just stop hearing that flute call. Let's hear some other stuff, some noise. So here Kamsa is representing that. So it is said that Kamsa once, he already got some, he got acquaintance of the flute call of Krishna. So he wanted to capture Krishna. So he was thinking, what to do with this flute? Because, I mean, it seems that it's a very powerful weapon. That's his weapon, basically. Krishna in Vrindavan, you don't see him with disc and stuff like that in Vrindavan. It's just like, that's a pretty powerful one. So it says that Kamsa once gave training to his soldiers the following instruction. He said, when Krishna plays the flute, all the cows, and the cows will be very much present here also. When Krishna plays the flute, Kamsa said, all the cows, calves, sakas, and Braja Devis run to him. This flute has some mystic power, Kamsa said. Learn how to play this flute, he told his soldiers, and then we will attract all the Brajavasis out of Braj to Mathura, and then Krishna will be powerless. Similar psychology than Indra. Let's kill the Brajavasis, Krishna's killed. Let's bring the Brajavasis, Krishna's weak. Kamsa Das opened a flute training center in Mathura. When properly trained, Kamsa's minions went and played flutes in the forest of Braj. You can imagine, no? All of Kamsa's agents. Pretending to be Krishna. Not only playing flute, but pretending to play like Krishna. Hearing this, the cows looked up and thought. Remember, similar scene like this. Oh, it seems like Krishna. Is Krishna calling? The cows listen intently for a moment, but they are very clever. Their ears went to this side and that, drinking the sound of the flute, but they know the melody of Krishna's flute and were not fooled by Kamsa's attempt trick. They ignored the flute sound and continued to eat grass without a care. The contrast of the verse we have just seen. Stop lunch. No more lunch, no more nothing. Kamsa's minions thought, oh, Krishna's cows are very clever. They are not listening. Then they went and played the flute on the bank of the Jamuna, thinking, the gopis come here to collect water. When they come, we will mesmerize them with our attractive flute playing and we'll bring them to Mathura. But the gopis' ears have these chakras. I think we spoke in one class about that, the earrings, which protect them from antagonistic sounds. Like representing, they only have ears for Krishna. Nothing else is entering there. So their earrings are like guards, or like Jai Vijay, bodyguards, there, standing at the ears. Therefore, the gopis wear these like Murari chakras in their ears so that only the sound of Krishna's flute call can come into their ears. So in this way, many people send news and many other sounds come, but first-class sevakas, this is an extended example for us, no? Many sounds come to our ears and to our lives, but first-class serious sevakas or sadhakas will think, anukulyasa varjanam, anukulyasa sankalpa pratikulyasa varjanam. Is this sound helpful for my bhajan? Is this sound harmful for my bhajan? Should I allow it the entrance? Should I give this sound a password for entering into my mind and heart? Or check it right there? The example, famous example is Swarup Damodar filtering whatever presentation was given to Mahaprabhu to see if it was proper or not. If we will create the proper experience or will create unnecessary agitation. So some story, it has no particular like ending of practice. You may imagine the flute training center in Mathura was a hoax. It didn't work very nicely, so Kamsa had to close it. But the idea is, I mean, you cannot imitate to begin with Krishna's playing. It has to come from a particular side. And for those who have trained their ears and eyes and hearts, they won't be fooled by that. So we are sadhakas, we are not siddhas, we are not gopis, gopas. We are aspire to join their ranks eventually. So we have to, as sadhakas, be very careful with catching the flute call, the clarion call of Krishna through Guru, Parampara, Sadhus, and not giving entrance to other currents, because sound is so powerful that can carry us in any direction you can imagine possibly. In 1 second, you can be in hell if you pay attention to the wrong thing. So, anyhow, some thoughts we wanted to share today. Sorry for the extension. Next meeting. About Venu Gita, we will go again back to heaven, not to the devis, but to the birds. Not that much to heaven, but to the branches of the trees, a little bit up. So we'll speak about the effect of the flute on the birds, which will be in like in 3 days, because tomorrow, on Friday, tomorrow we have no lecture, and on the evening, Guru Maharaj has given lecture in the morning, and on Thursday we have Q&A in the evening. So Friday we continue with the next verse of Venu Gita. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Sri Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Venu Gita ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanandi, Vande Nanda Braja Srinam Padarenu Nabhikshna Sajasam Harikatvat Gitaam Punat Bhuvanat. Panchakalpatarubhyashchagripasindubhyaivacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda.